Afternoon. Good afternoon. This is Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for a work session. It is 3 o'clock on Monday, December 7th?
7th.
And I'm gathered with my colleagues, Commissioner Christman, Commissioner, what's your last name again?
Kalk.
And we are here for a work session on case PU-14-842. I believe this is our fourth work session, and I have met with Zach and, well, I've met with Julie, and kind of by virtue of meeting with Julie, also Jack, or Zach, because a lot of the stuff she shared with me was stuff that he had gone through as well. And so I think we're kind of narrowing down, but there still are a few outstanding issues that we're going to be needing information on. And so I don't have any other opening comments other than to say we'll go through all of these things that we've discussed, many of them in the past, get a status report. Some are completed, I think. Some are outstanding. And then some, you know, I don't know that we have a timeline we can set yet or not, but we're making progress. So I'll ask Commissioner Christman if he has any opening comments. Your mic is not on.
I don't have any comments that are on point, but I am just going to point out that throughout the day, a few times I've glanced out the window and looked at the flags at half staff and thought about the fact that today is the anniversary date of Pearl Harbor, and thought about that generation of people, both the ones that went over and served in the field abroad, as well as the ones who kept the country going back here and made this such a great country for people of our generation to live. And certainly deserve a lot of credit and kudos to those folks.
Thank you for mentioning that. I hadn't looked out the window yet today to notice that myself. Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank Zach and Julie for the last week's meeting. We asked for an update just on where we were at with all the information that we had asked for, and you kind of gave us a straw of what was available. And I said, hold that discussion of what each one is until the right time, so now is the right time. And the only thing I would say is that I think there's a lot of information that the commission has asked for, but quite honestly, I'm ready to vote. I mean, the information you're asking for is stuff that I'm not always – that we're asking for. I may think is not – it's commissioners have broad purview. But I've got enough information to vote on this thing, so I just give that to you, Madam Chair. I know there's a lot of stuff that we've asked for, but it comes down to it, we're going to have to cast a vote here, and so I've got enough information to do that.
All right. Well, we'll go through. I think there's two issues that I have outstanding that we'll get to as we go, and where I don't share your opinion for a vote quite yet, but maybe there's more information that you've received today on those, Zach, so... Okay, let's just start with the list, and I'll just kind of lead through and ask for updates from Zach and Julie, if that's okay. First of all, the Ferebee reroute, we talked about that in the past. They've provided an analysis the company has. My sense, the advantages of requiring such a reroute aren't very clear. And it's not the application that's in front of us, and so I'm not inclined to support requiring that reroute, and I don't feel like I need any more additional information on it either. I don't know if you guys have any additional thoughts to share on that, or are you ready?
Well, I guess if anything new has come up, I would be interested in what Zach or Julie would have to say.
The only thing that new that has really come up is at the last work session we did requests for a breakdown as to the pipeline length for the proposed route, which the company has provided to staff, and that document simply provides the length of the reroute in rods, as well as listing the landowners and the legal descriptions of those persons that would be affected by a reroute. So that is the only new information.
Can you summarize that for us, Zach? The number of landowners?
Right. There are 2,764 and a third rods length of the proposed reroute. There would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 17 affected tracts or landowners. Tracts, I suppose, would be more appropriate. Julie, did you have a chance to look at the difference in the mileage between the plan? We had talked about this before. This was one of the kind of the things that got there are many other issues coming up, but we were going to provide the commission a rough estimate as to the difference.
Is it something you want more information on, Randy?
No, I think that I had gotten that paperwork on that. I just wanted to know if there's anything just new.
Okay.
So, no, I'm good.
So we're all done with that issue. Correct.
Oh, absolutely. I just reinforce what I said before, that the commission doesn't have the authority to grant a rewrite. You either accept or reject the position. You can't say put it somewhere else. So I think that if we don't have enough information on the current route, we could continue to ask on the current route or open the corridor up, but we don't have the ability just to move it from A to B. It doesn't work that way.
Then on the Hilly-Schultz reroute, there was quite a lot of analysis done in that discussion at the hearings. The company did provide an analysis on that route. You know, it shows really that the existing route that they applied with is shorter, has fewer water body crossings, fewer road crossings. And the company has testified that they are comfortable that they have access to that route for the long haul for maintenance and any emergencies that come up. So there again, I don't think that the information we've received on a reroute warrants requiring the company to pursue that any further. But you've made yourself clear, Randy. How about you?
I also don't have anything else on that.
Okay. All right. The company did provide, they filed for a number of reroutes and route adjustments, and at the last work session we had, we asked for a little bit more information on what prompted those, and we have received all that information, and so I think that sort of concludes that topic. Julie, did you want to add anything on that?
No. Madam Commissioner, it seemed like a lot of those reroutes were actually at landowner requests. So.
Yeah. Okay. My colleagues have any issues on that? Randy?
In other meetings, we've talked about the HUVD reroute up there separately. Are you planning on dealing with that separately, or is that one of the other reroutes?
Actually, Julie, do you have an update on the HUVD reroute? The HUVD issue?
I do. I believe the HUVD issue is resolved, that HUVD has signed his easement, and it's all been taken care of. He's satisfied.
Commissioner, also, I believe that you inquired as to if any of the adjacent landowners were affected by that reroute on the HUVD property, and they are not. All of the reroute itself is all contained on property owned by the HUVDs.
And he's all signed off on it?
And yes, that's my understanding.
Excellent. Thank you.
And to clarify, the other reroutes are all within the stuff that's existing we talked about in the hearing. So the reroutes are asking for landowner preference don't take out the scope we've already covered, correct?
Mm-hmm. Say that again. I didn't catch the first part of your question. I'm sorry, Commissioner.
With the landowner requested reroutes are all within the scope of what we can do with existing procedures and laws.
I think you can certainly consider those, yeah. And here the company has submitted proposed reroutes and filed them. They're docketed. So in the case of Mr. HUVD and the HUVD property, that was specifically requested by the company. It was requested by the individual, but then the company went ahead and requested.
But there's a difference between these kind of reroute requests and the ones that the other ones we talked
about. Yes, I believe so.
All of those fell within the 1 mile corridor in the initial application, except for reroutes locations 12 and 14. And 14 was the Rick Rice issue. Remind me, he requested that. That was a landowner request.
I would have to take a look at that. I don't know if that was specific as to Rick Rice. I believe it was. And And those were all delineated the reasons for those requests to change. Some of them had to do with environmental, some of them had to do with construction issues, some of them had to do with landowner requests. And the company submitted those reroutes. They outlined the reasons for those reroutes. Since the last work session, we did give notice of opportunity for those two that were outside of the corridor for any comment. No one commented it within that 30-day period. And there isn't, in my mind, anything, you know, holding back those reroutes.
That's right. We noticed those just on the abundance of caution.
To be clear on the HUBD reroute submission, all of the proposed routing is within the corridor as well. So given our past precedent, past time, we didn't notice those changes. And I don't know if you discussed with Commissioner Fedorchuk, if you discussed with Julie Prescott as to that, but I don't see a need to notice any further opportunity for comment on the HUBD issue because it's been resolved amicably between the parties.
Okay. Very well. On easements, we have the latest is 83% of the parcels and 85% of the mileage. Is that correct?
I think it's 85% if you count the state trust land, 85.2%. This is kind of a, probably on your list as well, Commissioner, but if I
go ahead and
may,
talk about the state trust.
The state trust, thank you. They are going to be meeting next week. The board is going to be meeting on whether or not to approve those agreements that they've, in principle, the staff of the trust department has negotiated with Dakota Access, and the full board is going to vote on that next week. And if you add that, they're at about 83% today. If you add the state land portions, it would be about 85.2%. And I'm told that the tract and the miles, the tract versus the miles percentage is roughly the same at this time.
Okay. I'm looking at this chart. And you said they're at 83%, and that would take them to 85.2. I don't know which line you're really looking at. It looks to me like overall they're at, it seems like usually we're talking about tracts.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like overall they're currently at 84.15%.
Overall, I see that there. Yes, that appears to be true. And I did, this chart you're referring to, Commissioner, I just received it right before, so I haven't had a chance to study of it, but it does appear that that's correct, 84.153.
And so does the would the state tracts then take it to
85? It may take it that. You know, it's 85, 86. I was told about 85%.
Okay. Sounds, I mean, give or take, 85 is about where we're at.
I think I read that the Dakota are the trust lands tracks were something in the area of just under 1% of the route length, so that would be about.
So then that brings up the next issue, which is some of the interveners and the block. There's a block of folks. What's the status of those people?
Thank you, Commissioner. I spoke with Derek Broughton earlier today, who's attorney representing the intervener group, and I've also spoke with the company's attorney, Blaine Johnson, on this, and both were very optimistic. I know maybe I'm sounding a bit repetitive because that's been the case all along. The parties do continue to negotiate. However, this time I did receive some more specifics from both parties, and I understand that the company and Mr. Broughton representing his group, which comprise about 7.7% of those landowners on the route that are outstanding easements. They met last week, last Friday, and they've been reviewing red line changes to propose easement agreements. And it's my understanding, in speaking with Mr. Broughton, that he is going to be reviewing that latest proposals from the company and providing that back to the company as early as tonight. And the company and his Mr. Broughton's group of landowners plan to meet tomorrow to discuss terms of the easement. So that is moving on. I would note, Mr. Broughton noted that there has, you know, the company has brought condemnation actions on some of these properties. So, despite that, the parties do continue to negotiate on obtaining easements.
Okay. All right. Then the waivers.
If we could, Madam Chair, I just have to ask my colleagues a question on the easements. This is one of those areas I don't know that we're seeing it quite the same way, but a percentage of easements is not a de facto in our decision. I get it, but they're negotiating, but it's almost like we're emboldening the negotiation for them to raise the prices. No, that's not what we should be looking at. And so is there a certain number that my colleagues are trying to get to for percentage of easements?
I've never said that.
So what are we looking to gain now with asking for more easements in place? It's not a factor that we consider there.
We haven't asked for more easements to be in place, just an update. I haven't. Have you, Randy?
It's always been a matter of getting an update. And
I think there's an implication that we're looking for more easements before we'll make a decision. So I just wanted to get that clear.
Well, that's the wrong conclusion.
Okay, that's why I asked the question.
Anyway.
Okay. So that's not a factor.
It's just, it's just part of the process of the project and getting an update of the project every time we gather for a work session. But I agree with you. There isn't a set number, and it's not a factor that is, something that we've laid out as a specific target. But it is an important project update that
I would agree.
I agree
with that. It's an important project update, but I want to make sure that it was at least clear from where we were sitting that what we're trying to gain in that from a project update, not a decision driving factor.
Yep, I think we're all
okay.
Same page with that.
I will say, if a company came in ever with a proposal and was already in condemnation proceedings and hadn't executed an easement yet, I don't know that I would approve that.
Sure.
I don't know that I have a specific line in mind, but there's got to be an effort too.
I would agree with that.
And we all were saying the same thing early on when there was less than 50%. So waivers. What's the latest on the waivers?
I did have one clarification on that subject, though. Earlier, I thought that Mr. Broughton was representing about 15%, and I think you mentioned
7.7. Yeah.
So if that were to come together, then it would be about 92. It wouldn't jump it up to right at 100.
Right. Yes, that's my understanding, is about 7.7%.
Okay. Thank you.
And I also think, because those folks intervened, I like to get a status on where they're at, because we have communications directly with them as well. So, let's see. So, anything more on easements?
No, ma'am.
Waivers?
Waivers. Last work session, the company was waiting on three waivers for landowners who have residences within 500 feet of the proposed line. The company has recently received one of those easements. Gene Brown's easement was obtained recently. I understand that the two remaining, one is anticipated will be shortly signed. That is Carlin Welty's property. And just make sure I'm getting that right. I'm sorry. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but Iwin, Sean Iwin, it's anticipated that his will recently, will anticipated that he's going to sign an easement shortly with the company. Apparently he's been out of town. I was informed that today by the company, so they're working with him on that. And then the other easement is with Carlin Welts. Sir Welts is part of a landowner group, and the company is working with that landowner group, finalizing language on an easement, and they're continuing to work on that, and they received a red line changes on those proposals today. There is one bit of a update change, I suppose, in the last work session. It was raised today. There is potentially a mobile home that was placed within 500 feet. The company indicated to me earlier today that they are working with that particular landowner and describe him as, quote, friendly. So that additional waiver may have to be acquired by the company. But at this time, nothing definitive to report on that, but just to bring it to your attention.
Okay, so just to briefly summarize, how many, there was three outstanding waivers as of the last time. They've received one.
Correct.
There's two more outstanding.
Yes.
And they're still working on those. There's now, here's an issue where, you know, I don't know that we have, I don't have, or I'm not remembering if I do have it, the any of the circumstances around these waivers, because if they don't get them, then I assume they're asking us to find that there's no reasonable alternative. And I would need more information on,
right,
on that in order to get to that point.
Right. I mean, and I think, one, I believe you're right, Commissioner. Secondly, though, I don't think that we're quite there yet, but we're obviously getting closer as each day passes. So as my understanding, though, the company is working with those individual landowners and is optimistic.
And in the past, when we've not had all the waivers before in order, if you're to the point of being ready for that, Commissioner Kalk, we have
just
had to handle that. We've had to say either, you know,
yep,
move it or mm-hmm, get the waiver.
Yeah.
And the order has been pretty clear in how that has been
right
defined.
And that's what I would offer up here, too, just that same thing, that we make a decision of either widening the corridor and approving a corridor, not a specific route, and give them the flexibility to work it, or we just say, you've got to come back with the waiver, one or the other. But if we get to the point where this is the last issue out there, I see a path forward here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anything more on waivers from either of you?
So just to be clear, the mobile home is something that has been added since,
yes,
the hearings.
That is correct. That's correct. It's been added since the hearing, and it was recently discovered, as I understand it.
And you said one of the three has been obtained. One, they were optimistic that, mm-hmm, that was coming together. The third one, you said, is part of the landowner group. Is that like the Broughton landowner
no,
group?
It is a different landowner group that is not represented by Mr. Broughton.
Okay.
All right. We have in various work sessions had some discussions on the tree removal, and there's been some additional information that staff has dug up. This isn't an issue that's even requires anything from us in an order, but I do want to tie it up just so that we're kind of all on the same page. And so, Julie, if you can kind of clarify what PHMSA says and what they say in some of their follow-up documentation about trees along the route, that would be helpful.
Yes, Madam Chairman. PHMSA Part 195.412, Inspection of Right-of-Ways, talks about the operator shall inspect at certain intervals surface conditions on or adjacent to the pipeline right-of-way. Methods of inspection include walking, driving, flying, or other appropriate means of traversing the right-of-way. So it indicates that the right-of-way must be inspected. It doesn't say how that can occur, and it does not address tree removal.
And then in their follow-up clarification or their further decrees on that subject. I think you just had it.
I did just have it.
Don't have it?
I have it. It's probably got set aside at my desk when I was talking to Pat.
Do you want to, maybe you can run and get that, because I think we should just read from that letter, and we can move on and come back to that.
I scanned it and sent it to Jim.
There's a letter. That's what I was, I can pull it up real quick if you'd like. Should be able to at least.
Madam Chairman, I have it here. The follow-up interpretation from PHMSA dated September 2000 talks about tree removal, and it states, regulations do not require operators to keep their easements free of trees to make patrolling easier or to minimize the possibility of damage by tree roots, nor do the regulations give pipeline operators a right to remove trees on their pipeline easements. Authority of an operator to remove trees is subject to private agreements with landowners and to any local land use controls.
So I think that that's an issue that the company has said what their policy is, and some of the people that came to our hearings talked to us about that. And I think PHMSA is the one that sets the regulations for monitoring the pipeline for safety, and PHMSA says that they don't require the removal, that the easement holders can negotiate that with the company. And so I think that's where I see that. I don't see our involvement required in that issue. If some of the folks along the route feel really strongly that they want the trees to help with erosion control, that's an option that does exist under regulations, and they, I think, have that option to work with the company to exercise for their, you know, whatever mutual agreement they can come to.
I would agree with that, to the point of, I think, where PHMSA remains silent on some of that so states can further define it if they want. A lot of times the feds will lay out the guideline, and if states want to bring it down tighter, they can. But I agree to your point that if they, we don't have to have 50 feet or 100 feet if they can ratchet it down to the safety mark. So I think that makes sense, but I don't want it to be 5 feet away. So there is some safety involvement of tree roots that I think the state should.
But we don't have those guidelines right now, and we haven't created them. So,
well, I think we have a rule of thumb that we usually follow of a 50 foot and 25 feet in each side that we have traditionally followed that we could tweak if we need to. But I should think we should set some minimum safety.
Where does that rule of thumb exist?
I think 25 feet in either side is what we've usually looked at in previous pipeline cases in wooded areas. I'd have to go back and look.
That's in our.
So I don't know that we have regulations of our own that have been.
No, just like we wouldn't have
that
a
point.
But you wouldn't want to pipe a tree on top of a pipeline.
Well, I mean, except in this case, you know, I think that what we're getting back to and why this is still under discussion was the testimony from Mr. Wolf that there's already a pipeline there, and it caused a bunch of erosions, caused the whole river or creek, whatever it is, to move and follow it, and that this is an area where reclamation is going to be unsuccessful, and that the question was, should this be bored like we would under a river and get it way down there where the tree roots aren't going to be a factor and leave the trees? Because in his opinion, this, there's not going to be successful reclamation there.
Yeah.
And I think that's the question before us.
And that's
should we look at it similar to what we would a river and require a bore?
As long as we make that clear, I agree with that.
Getting maybe a bit deeper into it, too, where the 25 feet on each side comes from is from the tree shrub mitigation plan.
Right.
And the source of that, however, is not clear. But the company is receiving that and indicating in the certification that they're going to abide by that. So if we are going to do something different from that, then we need to provide for that in the order, as otherwise the company has agreed to follow that tree shrub mitigation plan, which states it in there. So we'll have to take a look at that, and I think we can do that.
Okay. Okay.
Did the company push back on what Mr. Wolf said about the erosion troubles in that region, or did they own? You know, as I recall, the response was, "Well, no, we have to keep it clear." Mm-hmm. And based on what Julie's saying, no, they don't have to keep it clear. There are other alternatives. I don't recall them saying what they were, if they were allowed to keep it clear, what they're going to do to prevent what happened with the other pipeline.
And all I remember is that they would. The one concession was that they could cut down a tree but leave the roots in place, you know, like a stump with the roots.
There was a discussion on that. Yes.
To help secure the soil. But
seems like a pretty short-term solution for a few years till that rots away.
So I guess I don't recall that ever getting beyond, we have to clear it, this is what we do, to the question of, well, if you weren't required to clear it, is this an option? But do you have any suggestions, Randy, for how to wrap this one up?
I don't really have a suggestion. I wish the company had responded to what they would. They just laid this thing out about how they have to do it because of PHMSA. Mm-hmm. I wish they had responded to what they would do if we didn't allow that. And unfortunately, they never did. So I don't have their response to that to go on at this point.
Well, my inclination is to reinforce to the company that they have the option within regulations to allow the trees to stay under certain, if we need to, you know, loosen up the tree and shrub in certain cases, weighing that, you know, maybe erosion is a significant issue in this area, and this is one way to prevent it and help, you know, it's something the landowner is interested in. They would have our blessing to do that with the landowner and kind of step out of it. But do you have any suggestions, Zach?
No, I think that, Commissioner Fedorchuk, what you just stated can be reinforced. And, you know, specific as to Mr. Wolf, I can bring this up with the company. The company representatives are here. There's probably some listening in as well. So we can discuss with them and see if something can't possibly be done.
Yeah. Okay. It was just a couple instances, you know, so I don't think it's, you know.
It seemed like, as I recall, he was very supportive of the project. Mm-hmm. That's for, he just thought that was, we had a reclamation disaster brewing in that one spot.
Right.
And seemed to have some knowledge of the subject, you know, based on previous experience to go by.
Okay.
Yeah. There was some discussion, Ms. Prescott and I were just discussing, but there was some discussion about reducing somewhat the area of trees that would be cut down. But we'll look into that and we'll inquire the company.
Okay. And hopefully have a resolution that kind of is a conclusion to this subject matter. Okay. The next issue I wanted to just get an update on is the Army Corps of Engineers permitting status, if we have any, if they've heard anything back from them. And then also, I did go back and look at the records and look at the spill modeling and the worst-case scenario, all of which was done and provided to us and looks very reasonable. I wanted to see if staff had clarified what the USA Army Corps of Engineers requires for any additional spill modeling, if any, on those river crossing permits.
Madam Chairman, I had briefly visited with Pat to get some ideas, some understanding of Part 194, and it talks about response plans and identifying areas along the line that can be expected to cause significant and substantial harm to the environment in the event of a discharge into navigable waters, which, of course, would be the Missouri, would be a Section 10 water in North Dakota. And they did, the spill response supplied talked about a worst case scenario upstream of the Missouri. I think it was Milepost 74, which is in Williams County upstream of the Missouri, or on the north side of the Missouri, I should say. As far as other navigable waters in North Dakota, the Dakota Access Project would not be crossing any other Section 10 waters besides Missouri.
Okay. All right.
And I hope I stated that correctly.
Okay.
Not an expert in PHMSA.
And the company did provide a fair amount of information to us on the record and in our hearings on all of those other crossings. So.
And the condition of the order can be like normal with once they file their spill response plan with PHMSA. Once it gets blessed, they have to file a copy of it with us. And if PHMSA would ask something that isn't in the current design, they would have to come back to us and ask for a modification of it that we could deal with at that time. But I think a provision of the order has to be they provide that to us when it gets approved.
Anything else on that, Randy? From your standpoint?
Going dead again.
Just a refresher of where we were on that Knife River crossing.
As far as the movement of the valve?
Correct. The landowner felt they should be closer. Did we have a good response as to why?
I know that we had a response.
Was it just the roads leading up to it, or did it have to do with the floodplain?
I'm drawing a blank. Forgive me, Commissioner. I would have to go back and take a look at my notes. Julie is feverishly looking here, and she may be able to bail me out here. But I know that the company did provide its rationale as far as the placement of that particular valve at that particular location.
Yeah, I have that too.
And just reading from what PHMSA requires, they just simply require a valve to be installed in a location that is accessible to authorized employees and protected from damage or tampering on each side of water crossings, of course, more than 100 feet wide from high water mark to high water mark.
By accessible, are they talking about where they can drive up to it easily or where it doesn't get underwater in a flood?
They do not find accessible. It's simply that's all that is stated. It's a very short section.
Are there any PHMSA guidelines? I mean, if it's just almost a really simple matter of convenience, well, we'd rather have it right here by the county road instead of driving up the section line a half mile or a mile. But in exchange for that, there's a whole bunch more oil in that pipe that could leak if there was a leak in that river. That doesn't seem like a very good reason to me. Are there any PHMSA guidelines on that?
They just simply state that it needs to be located along the pipeline system to minimize damage or pollution as appropriate for the terrain. And there isn't anything else that I have been able to find in a discussion with Pat that addresses, that's more specific.
Late filed Exhibit 6 provides the boring distances. Oh, this is the boring distances. This doesn't give the block valve distance. Sorry, I thought this was going to be helpful, but it isn't.
I do know that there was a comment on that, and Commissioner, I will follow up with you on that to get you my understanding of what the company's response was, if it's anything more detailed than what we've explained here just now.
It seems like it's an area where the company has really dug in their heels, and if there's a good reason, I'm all for it. I mean, I don't want it down under 10 feet of water in a spring flood either, if we need to be able to access it.
Sure.
And yet at the same time, if it's just a very simple matter of convenience, but we're leaving that river at a higher risk, I wouldn't be comfortable with that then.
Okay.
If I may, just briefly, the second part of your question, Commissioner Fedorchek asked to the status of the core application. The company reported to me that their Section 408 permit, the environmental assessment, will be published tomorrow. For 30 days, and there's nothing new to report on their nationwide permit 12 for the river crossing at this time.
Okay. All right. So the last two issues I have are the ones that I think are potentially the most complicated still, and that is the Enbridge issue. We haven't had a real good update on how that is kind of a complicated web, how those pipelines are going to be crossing and sharing easement space and determining the reclamation process. And we had a number of landowners show up at the hearings expressing concerns about that. And so how has that worked itself out? And maybe there's a resolution on that, and we can hear about that today.
Well, I know that in speaking with the company and the company providing update to me that they are continuing to work with Enbridge. Nothing has been put to paper and signed as an agreement, but I do understand that they are working with an individual at Enbridge specifically, and Dakota Access does not anticipate issues with this. Now, it's not to say, though, at the same time, Enbridge has filed its position on the matter, and Dakota Access disagrees with that position that Enbridge has taken. But as far as anything being resolved, nothing has specifically been resolved other than the companies have resolved to continue discussions in working out placement, in working out temporary workspace areas that may coincide with their respective projects as they are. So I don't have, unfortunately, anything more detailed than really what I've explained, Commissioner, other than what I've explained.
And here's an issue where I think that, you know, all fall we've been sort of waiting for the company to provide us with information, and this is one of the issues we've been waiting on, and we have to decide how wide the corridor is going to be and how that does or doesn't infringe on Enbridge's facilities in that same area.
Well,
the company proposed one solution and Enbridge proposed another.
Sure.
And I'm not hearing that there's a joint solution that they both agree to today.
Well, no, there isn't, but
I would just take that as I agree with you wholeheartedly, Commissioner. I think we just need to make a decision, and I tend to favor more of Enbridge's decision. We're going to have to decide this. They've been talking this for 6 months or more than that. They're not going to decide. They're going to force us into a box, and I think we make the move that we keep the separation, we keep the pipeline separate, and we're not going to be able to put them in the same tent trench, I don't think. So I think we're just going to have to make a decision on this one. And put those conditions in the order in which every party wants to agree with, they will. The fact that they haven't come to an agreement yet is unfortunate, but they're not going to agree.
As far as the requirements for a separation between pipelines, this has previously been discussed, in my understanding, and talking with Julie Prescott, is that there are no
PHMSA rules.
Specific requirements as far as a separation between pipelines.
So Enbridge requested
touch each other.
It's 25-foot offset for temporary workspace from the center line, 50-foot center line to center line, temporary workspace, Sandpiper separate non-overlapping workspace. They have seven different crossings of the two pipelines. So, Commissioner Kalk, if I understand you correctly, your position is take what Enbridge is saying and implement that?
Well, I'm certainly open to discussion with my colleagues on it, but I think that's the position, if I was asked today, would follow that line. They're the first operator in there. What they're asking for seems reasonable. And if they're not discussing this, they could have worked this out, but they're not. So I think we have to come down kind of where we're at, and that'll force the rest of the discussion. But in areas like this, I always tend to err on the side of safety, if you will, and it seems to me that to be the more safer pipeline safety position. Now, I understand the concerns that'll bring to remediation. I get that, too.
Yeah, and I think kind of the flip side of it, if this was going through town, we would be able to keep that as kind of distances. So I don't know
how important of a safety factor it is. But when if we grant these pipeline corridors and make them almost exclusive, that then even though nothing has been built there yet, now no one else can go anywhere even close to it, pretty soon we run out of space. There's nowhere to put anything else because everybody's trying to stay so far away, and I get why you'd want to protect your assets, but they wouldn't be near this far apart if they were coming through town.
And that's where I said, where I would be at, it would be the Enbridge, but I'm not against the Dakota Access position. We need to make a decision and move it down because they are not going to work this out, is my opinion. And if there's unique situations where it tends to be a little bit of a hybrid situation, there are some areas where we keep it separate, some areas we bring it close, I think that makes sense too. But I just think that this is a stalemate right now.
And ultimately, it may not be that we accept all of Enbridge's position or all of Dakota Access, and there may be, like you said, a hybrid. So, I mean, if the companies do want to have some, if they want to work it out, they can agree on something rather than the commission having to make a decision. And it's possible both sides may not like the decision. So it seems to me that the companies have said that they're continuing to work on it, but at some point an agreement does need to be reached.
Or we make a decision.
Or a decision is made, right.
Does staff want to take then a stab at coming up with a solution?
Because
you have to look at, the documents that have been filed with,
right,
which are not real easy to read. The various maps that show the locations of the proposed Enbridge and proposed Dakota Access, and come up with some solution for how we site it through that, corridor.
If that is your direction, I can work with Pat to.
Well, it sounds to me like that's what Commissioner Kalk is.
Well, I just think we should. Absolutely.
I mean,
and I'd
don't
be happy to
have the option. We have to, if we're going to come up with a solution ourselves, that's what we have to do.
I would defer to Ms. Prescott, given her expertise is more technical than mine, but I would think that we would be able to come up with something.
Well, and I think that's where the individual commissioners, there's nothing against one of us. We have our own thoughts. I'm happy to sit down with you, Julie, and give you my thoughts. And with a pipeline safety bias, I will tell you. But I think that that's probably where we're at right now. And if along the way they work out some type of agreement, then so be it. But we're back to that stalemate right now.
Yeah, and I do think we need to move forward with some solution, that knowing that we're doing that, maybe that gets them
right
to the bargaining table and they come up with something.
Well, and I would think that the companies are eager, if they're eager for the permits, they'd be compromising.
Well, Enbridge doesn't have to compromise. They can build. And that's what I think the position I'm guessing on. That this is just me. I know, of course, no discussion with anybody, but they've got a permit in hand. Why would they give it up? They can build. They don't have to wait. So that's probably what might be happening.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I just want to throw out here that I am concerned about, even just leaving it up to them, maybe it's best that we proceed with coming up with a solution. Because if there's some kind of a geographic bottleneck up here. As I recall, one of the landowners testified there's like a dozen different projects
going across
his or her property. There can't be a lot of room left for any construction. And so if what's left, if these two split it exactly evenly, it may be the end of that whole corridor. Where if we tighten them up a little bit more, it leaves us the option for yet another pipeline or telecommunications line or something like that. So maybe it is even best that we solve it, since mm-hmm. they haven't showed an ability to get it done so far.
Yep. And then there's the reclamation responsibilities as well that need to be clarified, both for the short term and the long term, for kind of joint ownership. And that was where the landowners were the most concerned.
If they're very close together, it might be a bit of a push forward to go ahead and get your
facilities in the ground so that the other person, other company is later. And
absolutely.
And ends up needing to get the grass going.
If you're Enbridge, you're moving out there right now as best they can.
Yeah, except for they.
They have no permit in Minnesota.
They have no endpoint. Okay, so that's Enbridge. Finally,
there was one last one, Madam Chair. I just thought of it, that we have to, as we do this, look at what the Enbridge order says or doesn't say. There may be, depending where we end up with this, there may be an impact to the Enbridge order, too. I just thought of that now. I don't know how that would play out.
Right, because we gave them a certain corridor.
But they've got a certain corridor now, and as we look at that, if we want to tweak that, that could open up a new set of challenges. But either way, I think we work through this. Because if Enbridge, even if they agree to something, Enbridge may have to tweak what they've already been as approved. If it's outside, if it's inside, try it again. If it's inside their approved corridor, they're okay. So they'll probably be okay. But it's just a factor just to throw out there that we don't miss it.
All right. So we'll work that through. And then finally is the SHPO. I'm sure my colleagues have seen the letter that the SHPO sent us. Requesting that we not do what has been the practice in the past of providing a permit contingent on SHPO concurrence, but prefer they state we prefer that our office is able to review all reports and addendums prior to the issue of the certificate of site compatibility and route permit to ensure that the cultural resources of the state are protected. So I did ask Julie a number of weeks ago to contact them, which she did, and find out more about what they were concerned about. And then I think you've followed up with them again since then, Julie. So can you kind of report on the provide a little more detail about the SHPO's concerns and how those things are being addressed and maybe solved?
Hopefully. Commissioners, I spoke with Susan Quinnell at SHPO this morning. She indicated to me that they had received all the Class 3 reports and they have reviewed those. What they're waiting for right now is information from the company concerning how the route will impact the sites that have been identified within the corridor and their mitigation plans. So they are waiting for that information. She also indicated to me that they were meeting at 2:30 today with the company and that she would get information to me following that meeting as to the status and any resolution.
So really they have the reports, they just don't have any information on how, on the mitigation measures.
Right.
So they know where all the key sites are.
Yes.
The critical sites, sensitive sites. They just don't know what the company plans to do about them.
Right. How are they going to handle it? How are they going to avoid them? So forth.
Mitigate impacts.
Right.
Okay. So hopefully that meeting resolves SHPO's concerns and they can move forward. But I, think that, what do you guys feel about their request? This is something they haven't done in the past. They haven't expressed concerns about our providing an order contingent on their concurrence in the past. My understanding was they felt that they didn't want our order to be used as leverage against them to speed things up and get the cultural resources done without thorough review. This is different than what we've seen in the past. Does it? How do you guys feel about how that affects how we proceed and our reliance on their expertise on the cultural resources side?
Well, I think that what we are doing is the right way to do it. I don't think one agency should have special status over other agencies. I mean, we do contingent upon Corps of Engineer approval or other approvals. I think that's the way to do it. If they're feeling pressure, that's themselves. I mean, no different than the Fish and Wildlife Service or anybody else. I think anything we can do to work more closely with them is great, but to give one agency that special authority, I think... I don't like that idea.
I also think, over the 3 years I've been here, SHPO's been really great to deal with. But as a long-term kind of a precedent, I suppose there's a possibility that could change over the years and we could end up evolving into a situation where this agency sits around and is unable to move because of
SHPO's delays, and I wouldn't think that's appropriate for future commissions either. So I think when we're ready with the rest of our things, we move, and if they have approved it, then we acknowledge that, and if they haven't, that we make our decision based on ultimate approval from SHPO, mm-hmm. like we have in the past.
Okay. I don't disagree that I don't want agencies out there dragging their feet, but I do also want to listen to the expert agencies when they have concerns, and I think that's what they were expressing. Now, I hope that they are getting what they need, and maybe it's just the company had a lot going on. This is a really long route and a lot of different states, and I'm sure they've had to prioritize where they focus, and South Dakota is maybe a little more straightforward. They're done there now. Hopefully they can tidy up this here and get what's needed, and so we can move forward with the remaining pieces of information that we've been looking for.
Madam Chair, if I could, this is not so much in case of this jurisdiction of this meeting today, but I would offer up that if the SHPO needs more people, I mean, we've gone down the last two legislative sessions and said we need more people in public utilities to keep up with the growth in pipelines and power lines, and they've granted us some bodies. I mean, if the SHPO needs more folks to do what they're doing, they should ask for them, and we could come down as an agency that relies heavily on them and say, listen, you've been kind enough to give us people to keep up with the tempo. We think the SHPO is a very important agency. They're key to all of our decisions, and they've requested X amount of resources, and we could support that. I mean, that's outside the box, but I don't know what their challenges are, but I'm guessing it probably...
Is that what it was, Julie? Was it that they don't have enough people, or they aren't... What?
Probably everything.
In this instance, it was indicated to me that they were simply waiting for information from the company.
Okay.
At this point.
Same as us a while back, right?
So... And hopefully, they've got the meeting today, so hopefully that'll be resolved. So, okay, well, any other issues that you two care to bring up? Zach, Julie, anything else?
The only thing I would mention is proposed findings are forthcoming or to be forthcoming by the company, so we should have those soon.
Okay. So if I'm just looking back over this list... Really, the remaining issue, there's the waivers, the Enbridge. And a report back from that meeting with SHPO. Am I missing anything?
Well, Zach's going to talk to the company some more about what to do about that potential erosion area in
yes,
Kildare with the,
yes.
the woods.
The tree.
And also about what the issue is about moving those valves closer to the Knife River.
Ah, yeah.
So far out. I did have one more thing, and Zach probably covered it right at the beginning, but I just noticed it in checking off my stuff. The September 16th meeting, we issued the notice of opportunity for hearing. Were there any responses to that or requests?
No, there were not, Commissioner.
Okay. Anything else?
I just had one thought, Madam Chair. The on the waivers, I mean, I think that, once again, it probably come down to a decision point. They give them X amount of time. I'm not for trying to find a no reasonable alternative because I don't think the record supports that. I think they either get the waiver or we open up the corridor. I think that's, once again, a decision. I can't see no reasonable alternative in those areas because I look through it. There are reasonable alternatives.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I would come down, those waivers.
All right. Anything else from you, Randy?
Although in that regard, we don't know the status of that mobile home that was moved in.
I don't even know if that's how that plays in, quite honestly, because it's if you approve the order, the next day it's in. I don't know how that would play out. It seems to me there's a benefit of the doubt that I would probably defer to the company on some of that.
Zach, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think in this instance, because the order has not been approved, I would recommend falling more on the side of getting the waiver, because we are aware of it. It's been brought to our attention, and it's in our code. If residents or business or schools within 500 feet, then a waiver must be obtained.
Well, I'll tell you, and this, I'm not even sure of the facts behind the case.
No,
and
I'm not either.
It didn't have to do with the PSC, but years ago I was made aware of a situation, and this had to do with a cattle feedlot, where someone just moved an old trailer close by, mm-hmm.
in order to make right. it impossible.
Sure, sure.
If something like that could have occurred I would have a great mm-hmm. deal of sympathy for the company
right,
in that regard.
I understand.
But to be honest, pragmatic though, this is not in the record. The trailer showing up there, that is not in the record.
No, it's not.
So that's a process that we'd have to button up as we go forward, too.
Right. Well, let's see if the issue can be taken care of by getting a waiver. That would be my preference. If it continues to be an issue, then we can get some more facts on it and see what we can do. Right.
Well, to Randy's point, I remember one of the first power line hearings we did, it came out the first hearing that if you were doing irrigation, you couldn't put a power line there. In the next two hearings, everybody was going to put in an irrigation
sure.
system. So it's just something we got to be aware
right,
of.
Right, right. Yeah.
Well, we've worked down from a dozen issues to three, so it's getting much closer, and I would share my colleague's interest in wrapping this up and getting it taken care of as soon as we can in these remaining issues.
Well, I didn't believe that to mean there wasn't issues, Madam Chair. I just think that the issues we're going to have to decide in our orders, because some of this, that's what my point about not just vote, hey, approve it. There's a lot of conditions that we've got to wrap around this thing, but mm-hmm. it's going to be on our backs, I think, to move this thing down the road one way or the other.
Okay. If there's no other comments, we will close the work session on Dakota Access, case number PU-14-842. Thank you.